Today, I'm joined by 1984 Galesburg High School graduate Greg Turner, truly one of the greatest running backs in the history of Silver Streaks football. After making his mark at Galesburg, the highly recruited Streak wound up at the University of Illinois, where he played in two college bowl games for the Fighting Illini. He graduated from the U of I with a degree in kinesiology. Inducted into the Galesburg Athletic Hall of Fame in 2010, Greg now lives in Shakopee, Minnesota, working as a sales director in sports apparel, and he's also coaching football, including his youngest son, Carson, who is a senior running back. So, Greg, thanks for joining me on WGIL.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. So let's go way back. Take me back to where your love for football first sparked. You know, what were specific moments or who got you hooked as a kid going back to JFL maybe?
That's a real good question, Jay. I have fond memories of JFL, and I think it was my older brother that actually got me into football and to try out, you know, with JFL. And so I played for the Packers at that time, and the head coach was Jamie Bjorkman.
Okay, I know Jamie, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so he really started to ingrain football in me. But probably the most prominent moment in my football career that has followed me since was Dave Cox.
Okay. Was
an assistant coach.
Yeah.
And I was having a hard time with the other, you know, the other players. I was young, 9 years old, and one of the bigger kids, but I just didn't have that mentality yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the older kids were kind of, dare I say, showing me the ropes of the finer side of tackle football.
Uh-huh.
And Dave pulled me aside and he said, Greg, he said, football is a sport where you can hit somebody and not get in trouble. And for whatever the reason, the light went off in my head. And from that moment on, it was a great love for me, football. But I have to attribute that to Coach Bjorkman and Coach Cox. But Coach Cox really defined football for me that really stuck with me.
So tell me if this story's true. I was talking to Carlos Interior, one of your former teammates. He said that at some point you weren't allowed to play JFL because you were so big. He said you were a man child back then.
Yeah. My last year, I think the weight limit was like 140, I think, for to even play. And at that time, and I'm making sure I get my states, I've coached across the country. At that time, that was just to play in JFL. It didn't matter if you were a skilled guy or not. A lot of states will break that weight down from you know, just playing or not just playing, but by skill, you know, whether you can carry the ball or not. And I think it was 140. And if I remember right, I had just come off of breaking my ankle and was ready to get back into it. And I think I weighed in at like 155 or something like that. And so I think Coach Bjorkman even petitioned, I would have been at Churchill at that time to see if I could play there, but they wouldn't let me. But
no go.
Carlos was right. I wasn't able to play my last year in JFL.
So, you came up through Galesburg High School in the 80s. You know, that was a time, and I was talking to Jerry Albright, one of your assistant coaches. You know, the Silver Streaks had a machine for producing running backs back then. You know, you had Gary Pugh, Phil Goodman, Bobby Jackson, yourself, Toby Davis. What's it like to be part of that era?
You know, that was always something to live up to, and especially for me with, you know, obviously with Gary, you know, I even go back further, Dean McKillop.
Yeah.
Gary Pugh and
Mitchell. I think Bill. It was a Mike. Yeah. Mitchell.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, yeah. We had a plethora of running backs, at that time. And I think the offense spoke to it. We always had the size, you know, that good old Midwestern, environment there to grow the linemen. But, you know, I believe the offense and just the way coach in my era, Coach Kane, well, it was all of them. Coach Kane presented, presented the offense to our opponents. You know, we were pretty run oriented. We were physical. It was a great thing to be a running back at GHS at that time.
And, you know, it was a case really where sometimes you didn't get as good as you were. You didn't get a chance to shine until you were a senior because you always had the guys, you know, ahead of, you know, behind you, I guess, to, you know, they were always seniors.
Well, yeah. And so, you know, I didn't get the opportunity to play up, if you will.
That's kind of what I was referring
yeah,
to.
Yeah. And, you know, Coach Kane was really good at letting me know, you know, and a tribute to him, always paying tribute to the guys that have stuck in the programs. And he really believed in playing, you know, the upperclassmen that, you know, again, had represented his program through the years. But, you know, he never let me doubt, you know, that I wasn't capable, but in the same context, he was strong in his programs and in his beliefs that, you know, the guys that have stuck with the program and obviously had the skill set and skill level, you know, he made sure that they participated, you know, in at the level and at the, dare I say, the amount that they should.
Mm-hmm. Were you one as a kid that went out and watched the Silver Streaks growing up?
Yeah. I mean, you know, back then there was always in the old configuration of the field and the stands, you know, on that visitor side, there was always that big opening there.
Yeah.
And of course we were back there playing, you know, playing whatever type of football we could get.
Right.
So yeah, I would start out watching the game, but sooner. Yeah. We were mimicking what we were seeing on the field over there.
Yeah. Who were some of the guys you looked up to?
Well, you know, again, you know, there was Gary Pugh and Phil. You know, I can remember Jeff Flater, Stu Pyatt. You know, there were a lot of guys that really kind of gave some example on, you know, what I learned later is just how to compete. You know, and there, you didn't have to be, you know, a loud and a rah-rah guy or anything like that. But, you know, every play you gave what you had. Mm-hmm. and get right back to the huddle and start it over again. So, you know, I can remember Kurt Bell pulling me aside a couple times and kind of, you know, giving me some insight into what's happening out there on the field and how to carry myself and how to perform. But, you know, for the most part, the coaches were really, I had some really good coaches in Galesburg, and I'll never be able to repay that.
Yeah. Speaking of coaches, you know, you mentioned a couple times you played for the legendary Kelly Kane, and, you know, can you share what made him such a special coach? I know you've talked about his X's and O's, but it's his competitive spirit that you've kind of credited with shaping your entire life.
Exactly. And for me, and you know, that Southern Illinois where Coach Kane came from, and you know, every once in a while that draw would come out. But you know, he from my mentality, he was just an extension of what I was, how I was raised, and what I was getting at home, and I think it stuck because here was somebody that wasn't related to me, but yet the language he was speaking you know, the respect that he commanded, you know, it wasn't anything new to me. I was raised with that. So it flowed right in. But then again, you know, he still gave you the freedom to be the athlete that you were, you know, and, you know, he didn't put a lot of, guidelines on what you did, but, you know, he did have a lot on how you did it.
Yeah.
You know, And as long as you stayed inside those parameters, it was a great thing.
Yeah. Talk about him as a X's and O's guy.
You know, if you've ever had a chance to speak to him, highly, highly intelligent guy and very football savvy, understood the game, both offense and defense, and being able to predict, you know, from a strategy standpoint, being able to understand the flow of the game, you know, and then laying in whatever type of plays that were needed. You know, I think he had a real strong understanding of the personnel that we had.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, inside of that offense and the confines of running a play at a certain hole, at a certain space, at a certain time, he still gave the freedom to be creative, you know, and a lot of times, you know, especially at the running back position, it's a feel, you know, and some people call it vision, but as running back and most running backs I speak to, it's a feel, you know, and he was a big proponent of letting you play in that feel. And that, to me, that was something that carried me, just being able to get on the field and not be robotic, even in the confines of a specific play. You know, he still allowed that freedom. But I think his intelligence and understanding the flow of the game and what to call and when to call it, I think speak for itself.
You know, back when we're in high school, I don't know if we realize coaches on how good they are or maybe even how bad they are. But did you realize at the time that he was kind of in another level?
Probably for me, my freshman year at Illinois, and how prepared I was to understand football. And mm-hmm. even at that level and at that time, Coach White, Mike White, was really kind of bringing in what is now the West Coast offense. But, you know, back then, and run and shoot or whatever you want to call it, the West Coast, he was in that, group of coaches, Vermeil, and there was a few other ones that really started throwing the ball, mm-hmm. you know? And so understanding defenses, understanding, football, and the differences and, you know, how linemen can change and how the different formations will dictate a play, even though it's written up one way, but because of a defensive alignment, it's going to change. I know for a fact that allowed me to get on the field sooner, just simply how prepared I was, and that's stemming from Coach Kane.
Okay. This is Jay Redford. I'm talking to former Galesburg and University of Illinois football star Greg Turner. So let's talk about your streaks career a little bit. You went 6-3 as a junior and then actually 7-3, and you had that playoff loss to Richwoods as a senior. How do you reflect on the year? I know you had some injury problems that year, right?
Yeah, my senior year was tough for me because I got hurt. I think it was that second game or so. And that was a really growing process for me mentally. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't able to contribute to the team. You know, I thought we at that point in time with the players we had, James Johnson, myself, Steve Batts, are, you know, really strong linemen across the line of scrimmage. I thought we had a real good chance to really get after state and even get up, you know, get into it a little deeper than what we did. But that's
what was the injury?
Ankle.
Yeah, that ankle's kind of bothered you your whole life.
It did. It did. And that was the same ankle I broke it when I was in JFL, and so it was that same one. And you know, I've had a slew of doctors look at it, and you know, they all say, Greg, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing there outside of just, you know, that coincidence, I guess, if you can put it that way.
Yeah. So how much did you get to play the rest of the year?
I came back off and on, but definitely nowhere near, you know, what I was.
Yeah.
But you know, I had a few plays I would contribute, and then something, you know, would happen and I'm limping back to the sidelines. So
yeah, that's pretty tough to deal with as a high school kid, right?
Yeah. I mean, especially when you're
supposed to be the guy, you know, it's kind of tough to.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I'm getting into myself here and please forgive me, but I worked pretty hard that off season to really get after it. And, you know, I had some college coaches whispering in my ear and, some of the older guys and I spent a considerable amount of time in the weight room and on the track, getting prepared. So yeah, it was a tough one for me.
Yeah.
Tough one.
So that season, I think you actually beat Richwoods, right? During the regular season. And then
during the regular season
and you lost to him in the playoffs. What do you remember about that playoff game?
Just the fact that, you know, they came really prepared for us. And you know, I was hearing a little chirping on the sidelines, you know, 33 this, 33 that, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Yeah, I still remember that to this day.
Yeah, Richwoods is no slouch. I mean, you know, they're always a perennial power, so.
Yeah.
At least they were back then.
That regular season game, we thumped them pretty good. If I say so myself, I think I got the player of the week just to mm-hmm. say a little bit. But anyway, area player of the week if I remember correctly. But
yeah, again, talking to Carlos, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into being a football player and a team off the field too. And he said he remembers trips to. You guys took the Pizza Hut, you and Jim Adams, Craig Stewart, James Johnson, you know, and what are your memories about just times off the field?
You know, teenage kids in high school, right?
Yeah.
And we fought all the things that, you know, we weren't supposed to do. And we fought all the things that, you know, you were supposed to do. You know, the camaraderie that we had, which I think, you know, really showed on the football field. And I know at that time I had a pretty strong relationship with James Johnson, our quarterback, and even to, you know, how it carried off on the field, even in the track. And you mentioned Coach Albright, you know, mm-hmm. James and I grew up together and we kind of had a strong feel for each other. And, you know, I knew, you know, in our offense, if he was pitching or if he was running, you know, and he knew, and if you can look back at some of the film, and he was pitching the ball, didn't look. He just pitched it. And
he's kind of an underrated guy, isn't he, in Silver Street?
Very, very, very athletic. And again, inside of Coach Kane's offense was built for it, you know, where that, and you see it a lot now in a lot of the different offenses now, especially at the high school level, the different wing tees and the different running formations. And if you don't have a quarterback that's a threat, you know, those offenses don't really shine like they can,
yeah,
even with the misdirection. But if your quarterback is a threat, it really opens up that offense. And it's tough for defense to defend because at any one point in time, there's three options on every play. And now they hide it behind the RPOs, run pass options and different things. But at its core, it's still the same, you know. He really gave another aspect to the offense, which helped me
mm-hmm.
because you had to defend both of us at any one point in time. You had to account for us and, you know, just the way the offense ran, you couldn't, you know,
yeah.
when we were clicking, it was a beautiful thing.
I know you were pretty heavily recruited, even going back to your sophomore year. How much did that injury your senior year impact your recruiting situation?
You know, you can take it by levels. Obviously D1, you know, it really hurt. And with the amount of, you know, guys they're reaching out to and the amount of options that they have at that level, you know, they're not going to, you know, give a second thought and going to a different player, you know? Mm-hmm. So at the D1 level, it really, you know, a lot of guys I had in Nebraska and Iowa, Iowa State, you know, those guys backed off pretty quick. You know, just again, nothing against them. They have the options, you know, and then at that time it was, Division I AA. And now it is, BCF, Football Championship Series, BCS. Yeah. Football Championship Series. But we called it 1AA mm-hmm. back in the 80s. And so had a strong slew of them from Northern Illinois to Iowa or Illinois State, you know, were probably the two biggest ones that I remember really coming after me.
Okay. So then how did you end up going to Illinois and playing for Mike White?
You know, obviously it was Illinois, but, you know, really sold me on, they really wanted a strong running game. They needed some bigger backs. I think the aspect of being didn't come with a lot of the accolades that, you know, I remember my recruiting trip there. You know, there was this player, he was all this, he was all that, and he's from St. Louis and he's from Chicago. And, you know, and, they, and I tell him where I'm from, Galesburg, well, where's that at? You know, and I think the competitive nature in me, they kind of, dare I say, disrespected me, but, you know, like I couldn't play or couldn't perform. Right. So, you know, with the school itself and, you know, the chance to get a degree from that school, it was pretty evident. I mean, it would have went there.
This is Jay Redford. I'm talking to former Galesburg Silver Streak and University of Illinois football player Greg Turner. I know we've talked to you before and you called Mike White, you know, a brilliant offensive mind. How did his coaching style build on what you learned from Coach Kane? You kind of talked about that a little bit.
You look at the history of football, especially in the Big Ten. Mike White really, really changed the whole concept. At that time, the reputation of the Big Ten was, you know, run and, you know, student body right, student body left in a cloud of dust. But all of a sudden, you know, Mike White comes in and we're throwing four downs in a row. We throw on first and 10, we throw on fourth and one, you know, so he really brought that, that type of imagination to the game. But, you know, very pro style, very pro oriented coach, you know, and back then we called it if then. So each play, you know, it was if your defender does this and you're going to do that. So really you each play was two or three plays in itself, depending on what position you were. And I lettered my freshman year there after my redshirt year. My first letter came at X, a wide receiver. You know, I got more reps there just, and again, back to Coach Kane and understanding football because I picked up the system pretty well to the point where I was playing basically three positions. I could play three positions inside of his offense.
Yeah. Who would the quarterback have been at that time?
Jack Trudeau was probably the most prominent one. I had Jack, I had, Kenny Cruz, Jack Minkhausen. And obviously, probably the biggest one is Jeff George. Mm-hmm. But Jack Trudeau and Jeff George are probably the two that stand out the most, you know, from a quarterback position inside of Coach Kane, or excuse me, Coach White's offense.
Yeah. You know, you knew how to do it, but how hard is that adjusting to somebody that's like going on to be a, you know, a pro quarterback with an arm like that?
You know, the
first time they're throwing to you, it's gotta feel a little different, right?
Well, you know, and again, some insight to it. Jack was just, he had a big, strong arm, but a different motion. And you could really feel the rotation on the ball. But Jeff George, I got to take a moment and pause. I mean, whew, I just remember, you know, he came to practice and he had to sit out a year. I think he transferred over from Indiana, I believe, or some school. But anyway, and we had Craig Swope, David Edwards, Ayers. We had three or four all Big Ten DBs back there. And so, you know, they'd come to practice even in team time, you know, face mask on snaps, you know, mouthpiece hanging out, and all of a sudden Jeff steps out there and he starts slinging the ball. The next thing you know, these guys are in their stance and they got their mouthpiece in. But the thing that follows Jeff George is he had the softest ball. Mm-hmm. It was so easy to catch. And I don't care if it was 10 yards or 60 yards. And I'll go down seeing, I kind of helped him on one of his pro days, and he was, I think it was, there was quite a few coaches there, but I just remember one play. He was backpedaling, and I think it was Darryl Usher, legitimate, I think electronic time 4-2 something, 4-3. broke free and off his back foot, Jeff hit him on a dime about 60 yards. And I remember a few of the pro scouts just packing up and leaving. And I, in my mind, arguably from, I think he was projected middle first round, late first round. On that one throw, he went from middle, late first round to number one on just that one throw.
Okay.
It was something else.
Yeah. After football, you dove into the sports apparel world, and you spent nearly 19 years with Nike. How did your background guide you into that kind of career?
You know, my junior and senior year really started. I was basically coach on the field, actually. And, you know, I was running our meetings. You know, our position coach would leave on Tuesdays and go recruit. And I would basically run our meetings. And so my degrees in kinesiology within mind, my professors were pushing me pretty hard to go into teaching and thus coaching. And that was kind of the direction I started off with. But then one of my professors that we were doing some research, and actually for Nike and the footwear companies at the time, he said, "Greg, you know, you might want to look at this. This kind of fits your, you know, kind of fits your personality and kind of fits on what you're doing." So, you know, I kind of started looking at that and really changed my curriculum on the fly, to incorporate, you know, a lot more business. So my minor is in business, but, it really flowed right into football and being around the athletics, but being able to give some insight into the product itself on feel and comfort and the different characteristics that you need, you know, I was able to speak to.
Boy, that's come a long way, hasn't it? I mean, we're pretty close to the same age, and, you know, leather shoes weren't around that long by the time you were in high school, right? I mean, we just got those back when we were in junior high. So, I mean, the whole apparel and shoes and everything has just come so far, right?
Yeah, it is crazy. The things, you know, the different polyesters and the different synthetic fabrics now. And, you know, it's even continuing to evolve, you know, and, you know, the whole goal of the manufacturing companies, Nike, Under Armour, Adidas, whomever is, you know, we used to say in, you know, some of the design rooms is, the best feel is no feel, you know, and that's a lot of the goal, especially the guys in Beaverton, Nike. That's still one of the design mantras is the comfort is almost like you're not wearing anything,
yeah.
You know, and that's what they're striving to get. But yeah, the chemistry behind the different fabrics is just unreal. What's happening now?
Yeah, you mentioned you've coached before, but you're back coaching again. You're coaching some high school and youth football up there in Minnesota. What's that experience been like? And, you know, what kind of lessons are you trying to teach your son, who's a senior running back this year?
You know, again, you know, from my coaching and a lot of my coaching style, if you will, and that stems from as far back as, you know, the Morgans. Coach Bob and Coach Bill and Coach O'Malley and Coach Allison, all of them had different personalities. All of them had different demeanors. And so I have defined it through the years as just the ability to communicate. And each kid is different. Each player is different. They hear, they see differently. And so the, you know, as a coach, it is your job, or at least the way I feel, it is my job to find out just what language that player is speaking in and listening in. And that's my job to communicate what I need, what I'm trying to do, whatever the goal is from a football perspective. It is my job to make sure that I'm communicating that way. But as my sons will say, Reese and Carson, I'm a little old school. Very old school.
Yeah.
And so I come a little differently than what the coaches are now. And in my mind, I try to reflect the game, and the game is relentless. The game doesn't care about your excuses. You know, you either get the play done, you execute your technique at your best effort, or you don't.
I'm glad you mentioned the assistant coaches or the sophomores. You know, Mr. O'Malley and the Allisons and all, you know, Mr. Albright and all the assistant coaches. I mean, those guys are just, you know, the Kelly Canes get the attention, you know, and they get the wins and losses, but those other guys are so important. And back where, when we were in school, those guys were so good. It was kind of a golden age for coaches, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, I go far back from Coach Bjorkman to Coach Cox. And again, I'll pick on the Morgans because Coach Bob really, really gave me a strong foundation on what my coaching philosophy, what my coaching style is. And I remember coming back, from college, and Coach Bob would always have the gym open on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. And we all showed up, and when we were there playing for him, you know, all the older exactly. guys would come in on Saturdays and play. You know this.
Yeah.
And I came to play one time, and there was one of his players, and I didn't want to hurt him. But,
yeah.
you know, I was supposed to go up and get the rebound strong, and I kind of eased off. Coach Bob laid into me like I was one of his players.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care that you got a full ride that you miss in Illinois. If you're in this gym, you go. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I can see that happening for sure.
You know, but I think Coach Bob and Coach Kane, the one thing they said to me was just simply give it back. Give it back what you gained, what you learned. That was their simple message to me, was just give it back. And that's what I've tried to do since, is just give it back.
Yeah. You know, giving back, you know, as a Guilford Athletic Hall of Famer and, you know, one of the greatest running backs, what message or advice would you give to the current Guilford players looking to carry on the game and the legacy?
I think probably the number one thing I learned and I preached, and not to get too philosophical, but and I've had opportunities to speak, and probably the one thing the one message that I give is, however it is that you see yourself playing, however it is that you see yourself performing as a player, and the beauty of this side note, you can take this off the field, but however that vision of yourself playing, you must practice that exact same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because every play, and you won't know until it's taken away from you, every play can be your last, especially in football.
Right.
And you don't know, and you're not, and as in life, and again, I'll try and keep it, don't want to get too big here, Jay, but you're not promised that next play.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so I think that's probably the one thing I try to instill is you have to practice exactly how you want to play. And, you know, when you get scared, when you get tired, when the guy is, you know, your opponent is, you know, better than you, if you will, or what have you, your body's going to do exactly what you've trained it to do, you know? And if there's one thing that you can do is practice that way, the game becomes a lot different, a lot more enjoyable if you can incorporate that.
Yeah. That's a great message. So we're going to finish with a rapid fire round. I'm going to say something. You give me your first thought. Okay. So how about, you mentioned James Johnson, but how about underrated Guilford teammate?
Craig Stewart.
Okay. Good athlete. Yeah.
Yeah. Athlete. Very, very good athlete. I've always said Craig Stewart was probably the best athlete in our class.
Yeah. Another guy that kind of goes unranked a little bit.
Well, you know, Batcher was there, Joe Droke, Pat Huffaker, Joe Dennis.
Yeah, Joe. Yeah.
Definitely Joe Dennis. He should have came out earlier. But some of those guys really, I thought really rounded out our team. Jim Adams, we mentioned before. Right. But yeah, we had some good guys there.
Okay. How about the best athlete you ever competed against?
Ooh. High school?
Any level.
Any level? Man, we had, from Pepper Johnson to Lorenzo White to defensively, you know, Pepper Johnson, Jeff George, Keith Jones, Howard Griffith. Man, I've had the luxury of seeing some really talented people. Craig Swope, probably, but the best pure athlete defining movement was Marlon Primos he was a DB for us, from LA, and his movement was just something different. Something different.
How about favorite all-time venue that you played at?
Whew. You know, it's got to come down to Ohio State or Michigan. You know, back in those days, Ohio State had that big dome. You remember the old turf fields? They had that big crown.
Yeah.
But the atmosphere there was second to none. And then Michigan, just because it was so big and the stands, you know, you only had from the sideline of the field to the beginning of the stands, I mean, really was maybe 10 yards.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and you were packed in there. But when you looked out into the stands, you didn't realize that, you know, it was 100,000+ people there.
Yeah.
And the fans were really nice. Ohio State, they weren't, but the atmosphere and the energy at Ohio State is something to behold.
Okay. How about the team you love to beat, both high school and college?
High school, you know, any of the Western Big Six teams at that time. I think Rocky had a special flavor to them because they were just so athletic.
Yeah.
You know, Moline was Moline. So especially there, you know, was that Wharton? Well, not, what was the field? I can't think of the field.
Browning Field. Yeah,
Browning Field, because Whitey's was right at the corner.
Right around the corner, yeah.
those guys, you know, we had just started playing the Peoria teams later. Probably the one team that still crawls with me that we never beat was Geneseo.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
At that time. That was always the one game I revved up to play. I wanted a piece of them. College, again, Ohio State, Michigan, the most physical one, whether it be legal and illegal, was Michigan State.
Okay.
But there was a few incidences in the tunnel going in for halftime that, you know, was that stand out, you know.
Yeah. Okay. How about after a loss, who has the toughest practice, Coach Kane or Coach White?
Coach White.
Yeah,
I remember a couple games. I think Iowa, they put it to us, and we got off the bus coming from the game, and get dressed. We're going to the field.
Oh wow, those are tough ones, aren't they?
Oh my goodness! Al Martindale was the trainer, and he was raising a fit, but Coach White wasn't having it.
Yeah, how about favorite Galesburg restaurant, past or present?
Ooh, you know, I grew up on the South Side, so Taco Hideout will always be that one.
Yeah, that's what Jerry
Hammer's Pizza. You know, Happy Joe's at that time.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously McDonald's. You know, in our community, and but yeah, there was always some pretty good places to eat there.
Yeah. Finally, Galesburg. What does Galesburg mean to you?
Home. I mean, you can scrape it off, and I've been fortunate to live in some of the major cities here and visit them, but nothing feels like home, you know. And As much as Galesburg doesn't have, obviously compared to other cities that I have, it is still that feeling of home, and that's as simple as I can say it, and that's as strong as I can say it is home.
Okay. That wraps up my conversation with Greg Turner. Greg, you know, you truly are one of the very best players that I've ever seen come through Galesburg, and it was a real thrill catching up with you today. So thanks for joining me on WGIL.
And Jay, thank you for having me. I appreciate your persistence when my schedule gets crazy. I greatly appreciate that, and thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. You're at the top of my list, so I'm glad I can cross that one off. So,
yes, sir. Thank you again.
Okay.
Take care of yourself, sir.